This is episode number 901 with Rob Dyrdek.
Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin.
Michael Jordan said, some people want it to happen. Some people wish it would happen. Others make it happen. And we've got the iconic and legendary Rob Dyrdek, who makes it happen on every area of his life. Here's a guy I've known for many years now, and I've seen him build massive businesses from ideas. I've seen him create the relationship and the family of his dreams. I've seen him master his health and do so many different things on so many different levels. And if you don't know who Rob is, he became a professional athlete at 16 years old. And at 18 years old, he used the knowledge he gained from skateboarding industry to create his first company. Surrounded by entrepreneurs in his youth, he quickly learned the power of building massive brands. In addition to building footwear, apparel, and skate brands, he also launched the world's first professional skateboarding league and skateboarding channel, ETN. He's produced multiple hit TV shows, including Robin Big, Rob Dyrdek's Fantasy Factory, and Ridiculousness, amongst many others. He's also launched and incubated many brands, and he's quickly rising as one of the top entrepreneurs out there. And in this interview, we talk about the difference between a business and an idea. We talk about how Fantasy Factory almost didn't make it on air, the key to living a balanced and full life, and why it's so important to pick one thing to master, that and so much more. And this was an interview I did many years ago with Rob, and he has since then transformed in many other ways in his life. So I'm very excited about this and what you're about to discover from his wisdom. I'm super excited about this interview with Rob Dyrdek. Make sure to share him some love online at Rob Dyrdek and use this link, lewishowes.com/901. Text it to a friend, post it on your Instagram stories, on Twitter and Facebook, and get this out there to a friend that you think would be inspired by Rob Dyrdek, from small town skateboarder to media mogul empire.
Welcome everyone back to the School of Greatness. We have the legend from Ohio, Rob Dyrdek, in the house.
Ohio, man. Just two guys.
Two guys.
Out in Beverly Hills now, just from Ohio.
Just living the dream.
Yeah,
you know? I want to, before I get you to share your bio, because I have an intro that I already did before this, I want to do some things we have in common.
Sure.
All right, so some common things that Rob and Lewis have in common. Both from Ohio. First and first, I mean, I got my Haas shirt on.
You do. Lovely. Always, every time you see the shape of the Buckeye State, you feel some type of way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And just before we get too deep into Ohio, I want you to know that I went to game 7. Finals. And it was like,
How much pride did you have?
Look, I have never, you know who I watched it with was D Wade, right?
Oh my gosh.
It was like, I don't believe in my life I have ever lived through dramatic storytelling and to where I couldn't – an entire like 20,000 people experiencing this just riveted like just storytelling. And when they – I couldn't – like I almost like cried. I was so excited. You know what I mean?
I'm going to tell you where I was.
Yeah.
I was playing with the USA national team in Buenos Aires in Argentina for the Pan Am Championships.
Yeah.
Now, we had just finished, and I think we lost a game to, I don't know, Brazil or someone who was just in the Olympics. And I'm like, we got to get back to watch game 7, right? I'm like, I don't care what we do. We got to get back to the hotel. And there's no English-speaking ESPN. It's like ESPN the Ocho or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they're like so – they're like, goal! You know, every time they score, it's like a soccer game to them.
So you didn't even – oh, so you had to listen to it.
I'm listening in Spanish.
Man,
but I can feel
cool.
It, right?
That's cool. Yeah.
And it's down to the last minute. No one – I'm in my room by myself, and I'm literally screaming like the whole city must have heard me.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable, man.
That's
so much fun.
And you got lucky that you were at least in a place that was like – only on the same time zone.
Exactly.
Least,
yeah.
You know,
it was like an hour or two off
of being in Europe or something where you were like, jam.
It was amazing, man.
Good for you. Shout out to Ohio. Shout out to LeBron, the whole Cavs team.
There you go.
Dan Gilbert and everybody.
The second thing that we have in common, we're both former pro athletes.
That's right. That's right.
Skateboarding.
Yeah.
And I played professional football.
Okay.
So there you go. That's number two. And how long were you a pro for? Officially a pro.
Look, skateboarding is a little gray. You know what I mean?
How long did you get paid to like compete, I guess, right?
I up until last year.
Wow.
You know what I mean? But I didn't get – I would say last year is when I stopped all my signature product.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So that was, you know, 20-plus years.
Wow.
You know what I mean? So it's –
that's legendary status.
I turned pro at 16.
Living in Ohio, you were pro.
Yeah. And then – made this a very long run. And you know, there was points in it where I had to check myself and reevaluate myself and rededicate myself to my craft. As 23, I thought it was over. You know, at the time, they had signed my final – they gave me a two-year contract for DC and one more shoe, and they were like, we think your best years are behind you, you know. And
at 23?
Like, yeah.
That's like – not even your prime yet.
Look, but back then I was like, I'm a mess. But of course I was eating shitty and drinking a ton. You know what I mean? And not nearly as focused, lost my way because my ambition was so much bigger than being a professional athlete. And from that point on, I only signed 2-year deals. I said, look, I promise you 2 years from now, I'll be a completely different human being. And then I never signed more than a two-year deal ever again. Cause I made a commitment of like every 2 years, I will shape shift to another level. And that's what I did continually up until I signed a 7-year deal. Then they went bankrupt. You know,
sure. How much does a pro athlete make? Like, what's a 2-year deal back when you're 23? Like, is that 100 grand a year? Is that 20 grand? What is that?
I mean, back there, you could make two to 500,000 depending on a shoe, right? And
wow.
And
a year.
Yeah. But what one of my early big hustles was, I was so good at designing shoes and I would design these hit shoes and make all this royalty money, right? So even though you'd be guaranteed 200,000,
you're making $2 a shoe for
right. So
life.
you could end up making 500, 600, 700. Some guys would make like $1 million, $2 million off one shoe, right? So I did a deal with them when I signed that second year contract of allow me to go through the same process as the designers, right? And what the designers did is they did hand sketches, then they made Illustrator files and then put them on boards and presented to sales. So I would just, I'd like do like 20 of them. I would
Shut
get up there and I was the pro
How
skater.
You?
You know, I was 24 back then, right? 25.
Wow.
I would razzle dazzle them. I would put on a show in that sales room because it was like, it'd be like, oh, what, the pros here, right? And I ended up.
You could speak from what athletes wanted.
Yeah. And, but I sold it to even so many deeper levels than that of like, this is what's trending and, you know, all that and all the colorways and materials. And at one point I had a third of the entire line. So I was getting royalty off of 30 or 40 shoes.
Oh my gosh.
And when Quiksilver came in and purchased DC, they were like, what? Why does one of the pro skaters get paid
all the money.
So much money, right? Because the designer gets paid like
60 grand a year.
Yeah,
that's
and I'm
it.
Literally getting like 100 plus for all these shoes.
Shut
you know what
up.
I mean? So they kind of put the kibosh on that after they were like, look, like you
giving you too much.
We just can't do this. Like, you know, like when they bought it, you know what I mean? But that's
just a
little insight.
That's
to
amazing,
a thing.
Dude. I love that side hustle.
Yeah.
Dude, I didn't
Born
know you were a designer
hustle.
Like that.
What I called at a younger age was we called that stir frying.
Stir frying.
Right? Where you would just throw a bunch of different things in and cook it up.
Works,
you know what I mean? And that's, again, seeing an opportunity approaching, not saying, hey, let me design 10 shoes. It was like, let me go through the same process as the designers, pitch that to the CEO. He's like, shit, okay. Well, yeah, if he out designs our team, sure, let's give him a royalty, you know? And, even he didn't fully anticipate it, you know. And the sad part was, is like, you know, I'd go in there and just razzle dazzle and dance and sell them. And then they would pick them and literally I would pick a designer and hand it to him and he'd literally have to do everything.
Right.
He would have to do all, like, get everything made, get all the manufacturing, go through the whole process of it. And I would just like check in. Oh, that looks sick.
Oh,
like,
cool. Yeah. Change that.
Send
me
my check.
Wow. Amazing. And you were in Ohio still during this.
No, that was California. That was like, I left Ohio at 16.
Really?
Yeah. So I stopped going to school at 16 and, got guaranteed at the time. I had already turned pro, and right when I turned 17, you know, in that sort of era, you just got board royalties. That's, and maybe some little demo fees. So I would get like $200-$300 here, you know, in Christmas of that year, I sold one board and got a $2 check. And, they were like, if you move to California, we'll give you $1,000 a month. And I was like,
you're like, I'm rich,
like gone. You know what I mean? And wow. that was sort of the genesis of getting out there. And then once I got out there, then it just really started building, because then all the other companies out here, were trying to steal me, thinking that I would leave the small Ohio company, which I just leveraged to get a little bit more money out of those guys.
Sure. Sure. Of course. You're smart. Where were you living when you first moved out here?
I moved to San Diego. And at the time I moved in with these three girls, my homie from Ohio and these three girls. And when I told my mom, this is the arrangement that I made, and we got a room inside an apartment with three girls, she said, oh my God, you're going to have AIDS. Like, immediately equated me living with three girls as getting AIDS, you know? So that was my first thing. I moved to Encinitas, California.
Sure, sure.
Down the beach.
Yeah, man. Near PB? Is that near Pacific Beach?
No, I eventually moved to PB because it was North County, was pretty far from where the action was. Right. So I had eventually moved to Pacific Beach, and, you know, just wild in the streets. I was wild, you know, and I had went to the Ohio DMV with my friend's social security card and birth certificate. Uh-huh. And because back then in Ohio, if you had those two, they'd give you an ID. You didn't have to wait. They give it to you on the spot, you know? So I think at the time I had stayed up all night and went there at like 6 a.m. and I was like shaking, you know what I mean? Like trying to fill it out. Like, you know, like I'm such a criminal right now, you know, feeling so illegal. You know, I already look, you know, imagine how young I looked at 17. And, you know, I'm like there, I fill out all the paperwork and I go to take the photo and they're like, you're not 21.
Wow.
And I'm like, I am 21. Everybody says I'm not, but I am. And he's like, excuse me? He's like, can you move the background to blue for 21? I was like, oh, sorry.
Just, oh my gosh.
And then I have this like photo of like that ID, and I took that thing out of there, man. And I partied so hard.
You were 16?
In PB. I was 17.
Oh my gosh.
I was known as Little Bill because my ID was William Weiss, a friend of mine. So in Pacific Beach, California, I would go out
hard.
7 nights a week, and I was known as Little Bill at the PB bar.
Just crush it.
You know what I mean? So. PB and me wasn't exactly the right way to take off my career and my teenage years. I wasn't really focused. Had all the ambition, the drive, but didn't really quite. Was still very exploratory in the early ages. You know?
That's hilarious, man. Another thing in common for us is we are both entrepreneurs. Who, what I heard you say in the video is you never started out to be an entrepreneur. Your dad was selling suits. My dad was selling insurance.
Yeah.
Couple of Ohio guys, but you didn't start out to be an entrepreneur, right? You just wanted to be an athlete. Is that what I?
No. Well, no, I was raised by entrepreneur wolves, right? Mm-hmm. I wasn't, I knew no other way, right? It's like, despite wanting to be a professional athlete and getting so good really quick, but the first person I made a phone call to when I was 11 years old was a guy named Jimmy George at the local skate shop, right? And I said, if I get 10 people to enter your contest. He was having a contest. Can I get in for free? Now, Jimmy George was an 18-year-old entrepreneur who started his own skate shop. And what has sort of happened is this sort of ecosystem of skateboarding entrepreneurialism exploded in Dayton, Ohio.
Really?
So he started – not only did he start the skate shop, then he started a boutique, then he started a distribution company. So then one of my close friends that was working at the shop then started a clothing line. Then when the Alien Workshop, the company I was pro for my entire career, those guys moved back and started the Alien Workshop in Dayton, Ohio. All of this incredible. So to me, when I was young, it was just, this is what I'm going to do. Everyone around me, all the people that I spend the most time with are all starting their own companies. This is just what I'm going to do. So that's what led to the moment I got to California. First thing I did was start a company, right? And, to me is that great outlier sort of aspect of you didn't know any other way. Like, it wasn't even weird to you that you're already thinking about, like, you didn't look at it as business. Like, it was just, this is what you did. All your friends did, and everybody you know, they built companies and started companies, even though I didn't fully understand what that meant, right? Like, I have always, it took me many years to understand the difference between a business and an idea, you know, and a lot of people with drive and will and the ability to execute bring ideas to life, but they're not good businesses. And some of them are quite frankly terrible businesses, you know, and great ideas. And that's what I suffered with a lot in my early days of being a uneducated guy who didn't go to his last year of high school, who took a night class to get a diploma, and who apparently, even though I don't fully remember this story, my mom says, like, they tried to tell me that, no, you got to go to school. And I just convinced the counselors and all of the principals that I was like, I didn't need to. And that they finally just let me, like, he's not coming. So, like, I guess he doesn't have to. Like, they just let me go. But that's sort of the difference. I had a very unusual upbringing in that sense, you know, and even when I was like 14, I spent no time with kids in my school. Jimmy George would pick me up from school and we would go, my mom would drop me off the shop during the weeks. And then on the weekends, I would stay with him all weekend.
The skate shop.
Yeah. So the kid that owned who had built the skate shop. So then I would travel all over with him and just be literally up in the mix of their business and how they did everything. And that was really like the major influence on me at a really early age of like calculating what my version of my business was going to be.
Yeah. You know? Wow.
Yeah.
Who was most influential in your life growing up?
Yeah. I think that core group, there's Jimmy George, a guy named Chris Carter and Mike Hill, who went on to start the Alien Workshop. It was this kind of core group of entrepreneurs and mentors that were older and that I skated for, right? Yeah. Almost, right? One had the skate shop, one built the company, you know, and then, it, you know, God bless my mom, who I found out when I was like doing all my biomechanical body research, like they were like crawling patterns, like find out when you walked for the first time. And my mom was like, I thought for sure, like she was going to get, no, your sister was having problem with her eyes and they said not to let you, like, cause she started walking after 6 months. So I didn't let you walk for a year, even when you tried to, right? And like, I really believe that's like the foundation of like what allowed me to become an athlete. Right?
Oh, wow.
And she was the one who was like, he's small. We got to put him in karate, you know, and like try to chase it down. And my dad was always like literally. Like, he could do anything, I could do anything, right? So it'd just be like, Dad, this week, he's like, of course I can do that. I'm your dad, right? He's like, of course you can, my dad, right? And I got that same sort of like, of course I can, like, you know, like from him, you know, and that spirit of like understanding people and calibrating with people's energy and just enjoying life combined with this sort of paranoid mother. Who wanted to get me into stuff, who was so afraid I was going to be bullied because I was smaller, which led to this athleticism and this foundation of success at such an early age and this true deep belief that you can do anything foundationally at a very young age that, when then mixed with these older entrepreneurs and older mentors created the pool that eventually birthed someone like me to do the type of things that I do in a history, in a career, in a life on so many different levels.
Yeah. Amazing, man.
Steve. But I knew you'd appreciate it.
No, I love all this stuff. I love all this stuff. Another thing in common, we're both ordained ministers from the Universal Life Church.
Yeah, man. Who'd you marry, man?
I actually didn't marry anyone, but when I was in college, I was like, oh, this looks cool. I want to be like an ordained minister.
Yeah.
So I went online and did it. But
let me give you some depth.
But I know you did when you did it on a show of yours, right?
Let me tell you how it went, right? So I had this, I embrace stalkers, right? I think it's just something kind of funny.
Do you have a lot of stalkers?
I do, you know, and I have this theory on stalking is like when people are on, you engage with them, it humanizes you and makes you less interesting, right? But I had this deaf couple that would follow me everywhere I went, right? And whether it was when I jockeyed the horse, they'd go there. When I do my car stunts, they were there. Whatever, if I threw a party in a club, you know, they were there. And I kind of just thought they were cute. You know what I mean? Like they were in love and a deaf couple and they're just super fans. Yeah, yeah. You know, whatever. So he shows up to my birthday, presents me with a Rolex, right?
Uninvited.
Uninvited, yeah.
He's just
you know,
there.
It's like a public at one of the clubs, okay, you know what I mean? So he shows up, you know what I mean? He's like, you have heart. I said, motherfucker, I wouldn't take a Rolex from one of my best friends unless they were really rich.
Yeah.
I'm not taking this from you, right? And so then he gave me a card that just said, hey, I want to get engaged. I can't remember the name of the time. Like, will you help me? And I'm like, you want to know what? I'm going to do an episode about this.
That's crazy.
So I learned sign language. I set this entire thing up, had her surprise, like blindfold her, set the whole thing, put her on the zip line at the factory, sent her down, like, you know, he jumped out, fuck, he lays down, like, will you marry me?
No
you know? And she's like, no.
What?
And I'm like,
on TV?
Yeah, and we're like, wait, what? And he's like, please, like, no, absolutely no.
What?
Then he's like, for TV? She's like, fine.
Shut up.
And then, like, it's like, I'd marry you to me. I'm like, oh, God, okay, whoa, all right. Like, and so
I had planned,
no part of me thought that he hadn't had that part worked out, right? So I just laid out the entire episode, went and got ordained for all of that, and
oh, my God.
And then when they did it, I couldn't do it, right? So fast forward 2 years later, and it's such a good idea for an episode, right?
Amazing.
And I'm like, God, it would only matter if I could marry someone that was significant in my life. My sister had a boyfriend for like 2 years at the time. So I called my mom, and I'm like, they ever talk about getting married? And she's like, ah, they said they're just going to go to the courthouse. And I'm like, shit, okay, will you tell them if they're willing to get married in the next 3 months – that I'll shoot an episode and pay for their amazing wedding and give them a big honeymoon and all this stuff. And so she's like, okay. So like an hour later, I'm like, man, what am I doing? Like, why am I trying to mess with her life and their life? Like, don't put the pressure on. Like, I don't know. Like, you know, like, why are you messing with their life for your own TV entertainment? And so I call her. I say, hey, what? Ah, shit. I'm like, do you talk to mom? Yes. And I'm like, what? She's like, well, just so you know, I just brought it up to Jason. He was like, oh, great. Because it's just something we've never talked about, right? And I'm like, never talked about? My mom just made that up saying like, oh, they said they're going to go to a courthouse. Right. They've never even, these two have been together for 2 years. They never spoke about marriage. So I said, man, put him on the phone. I said, hey, dude, I'm so sorry. I'm not trying to f*** with your life, this whole TV thing and whatever, but look, on some real shit, if you'll get married in 3 months,
it'll be pretty epic.
I will pay for your wedding and I'll give you guys like 100 G's.
Holy cow.
You know what I mean? And he was like, all right, let me talk about it. And, so we shot that episode, did it like the whole thing and had my sister's wedding inside the Fantasy Factory. And
did she love it or was she like,
she loved it, you know? And to me, it's like, yeah, it's blending entertainment and creativity and being absurd and over the top, but fucking that's special, man. You know what I mean? It's like, it's another one of these incredible life moments that I have in a highlight reel of incredible moments that money can't buy. And it is timing and creativity and opportunity, all these things mashed into one with a little bit of magic, you know, and for me, you know, I'll never do it again. It's like people hit me up all the time. I want to, you know, get ordained. And that literally is the most significant one, right?
Right.
Because it's like, it's just my sister and me. And it's like, and she, you know, that was at 40, you know, and then she, they immediately got pregnant and she had my nephew at 41. Straight buzzer beater, you know, and that's why the following time I was like, okay, I really feel like I shifted their whole existence. These are two people that didn't talk about marriage
about
who now have a child. And that's why in the following season, then I just bought them like a full house so that they could just have something free and clear that could be the true foundation of their family forever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I'm, manipulated the universe on that one. It's my responsibility to make sure that you're secure and peaceful inside your existence. You know what I mean? But as you know, in Ohio, that doesn't, you get a lot for
you get a lot for 100 grand. You're a king.
Yeah. No, look, too.
Dayton as well.
Look,
like 60 grand. You got a mansion.
Yeah. No, look, I spent like 380.
Yeah. Right? So oh my God. They're living large.
Like, it's like, it's a beautiful.
My aunt has a place that she got for a half a mil on like the Scioto or the Ohio River right in Dublin, Ohio. I don't know if you know Dublin. No. But it's like a $500,000 home, but it's got like 12 bedrooms and like six car garage and on a river with a, you know, a boat or whatever. It's like four wings for like $5,000 a month. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Ohio, man.
You'll never, especially being from there, you'll never not like think about how far what your rent is in this place. What you, the amount that you could own.
And,
but the difference is too, is you would buy it for
three.
Thing is, will be worth 400 10 years from now. It's not like out here when the waves flowing out here,
it's
you
like double.
You could literally make millions off of a shitty house in the hills.
Dude, my first apartment when I was making a little bit of money was $495 a month in Columbus, Ohio. Yeah. And it was like the most ghetto building in downtown in the short north. And I remember I moved to New York City for like a month to go just try it out, because I had a couple speaking gigs and I was like, let me just try it out for a month. And it was $2,700. And I remember feeling like I wanted to throw up that I was paying $2,700 for 1 month when I was paying $495.
Yeah.
And then after 1 week of being there, I was like, I get it. Like the inspiration, like the motivation, I was like, I get it. And then I paid $3,600 a month for the next month. And I was like, oh, I can't believe I'm writing this check, man. Yeah. But then I was like, you know, it's just like driving me to create more and be more inspired and do more. And it was so much fun.
Plus, it's the price of your journey.
Journey, man. Yeah.
You know what I mean? You could have moved probably out to like Brooklyn or wherever. And
right. Now I was in Manhattan, like Soho. Like it was amazing. It was amazing. It was magical. And the fifth thing we have in common is we both love ridiculousness. Man, you've done an amazing job at this show. Like, I watch it for like, you know, I watch it for hours every night. I'm like, this is the funniest show on TV.
Yeah.
It's so funny. So congrats on creating a winning formula, which isn't something new. You know, people have been doing funniest home videos for years, right?
Yeah. Well, look, even when I, you know, conceptualized it, it was like I read an article with Vinny DiBona in The Hollywood Reporter about the $500 million syndication business of America's Funniest Home Videos.
Shut up.
So
you're like, oh, this makes sense.
But then what I did when I pitched it in the beginning is I took an episode of America's Funniest Home Videos and just stripped out all the fat, like, and showed that, like, hey, there's actually only about 5 minutes that's good in here. And then I would go in and pitched it to all the networks with like an Xbox controller and like, you know, pointing it out and talking through like basically just almost how I do the show at this time. And even at the time, I sold it during Robin Big, right? Because I knew that I wasn't going to do that any longer, right? And
it was
so,
four seasons?
Three seasons. So in the –
which was brilliant, by the way.
In the third season, I sold it direct to series, right? And at the time, it was called Money Shot, and because we were going to give away money like America's Funniest Home Videos. And then they were like, we want another reality show. And then offered me all this money, right? And they were like, season four of Robin Big or your own show, right?
Fantasy Factory, right?
To go with Money Shot at the time, right? So, but I got paid probably a quarter on the Money Shot show, right? So I decided at the time, like, let's just do Fantasy Factory first, you know what I mean? And because it's like so much more money, even though that was a dogfight. And then by the time...
A lot of production value, right? A lot of production for Fantasy Factory.
Yeah, well, no, it's just it wasn't that as balls to wall on that. You know what I mean? I knew I had to make something so much bigger than Robin Big,
right?
And that's why I knew. You know, I spent like 750 G's on that building, and midway through shooting it, they were like, "This show sucks." Like they didn't like the executives were like, "This thing sucks." Like I was getting attacked by a shark in the Bahamas.
I saw that one.
And the night before I was getting attacked, like basically the top of the food chain in MTV was like, this show is not going on the air. We shot all these episodes. They're like, cut it down to six episodes.
No way.
And I was in my hotel room going through probably 200 cuts trying to figure out what's missing here. Because what had actually happened is we tried to, the team that I created the show with only knows how to make a buddy comedy. So they tried to basically take this big building and take me and my cousin to be Robin Big, but we're not Robin Big, right? And one of the first cuts, when it had my lawyer and my manager and all the different characters, I'm like, no, this is an office dynamic. But the night before I got attacked by a shark, I sent out an email, of basically like, we over edited it. We went down to Robin Big. This is really like the office, but set in this extreme world, right? And it reeled everybody back in. And then we were able to recut everything to now have that office dynamic that then allowed it to go and explode, right? But that's the depth before I got up in the morning and had to be like, what am I doing? Do I really want to lose function of this arm, right? Because the whole thing, they're like, you can do this, but if you let go of it, of your arm, when it's on you, it will shatter your arm.
Oh, right? My gosh.
Because it's going to thrash so crazy. And like, and the worst part about it too is like, as you go to dive, like where you got to get attacked.
Oh,
like,
my gosh, dude. No.
Like you have to jump through like 50 sharks all up on the surface because they know someone's there, like going to feed them. So you got to jump through them and go down. And then if you can imagine, like you're like this, like while you are like got a piece of tuna on your arm.
I saw them put it out there.
And it's like, and when that thing locked on, I just remember like, good Lord, like, I can't believe, like, I'm really, there's a shark on me. This is like real, you know? And I remember when it was over, I was swimming back up and I just told myself, just stop and look at this world. Like, you will never be here again. Like, just look at, stop and never forget this moment, you know? And look down at a sunken ship and just sharks everywhere. And what was literally the dumbest idea I'd ever thought of in my life, 10 in the morning, was now like, I gotta talk about a shark. You know what I mean? It's like, wow. Now it's like, nobody's taking that away from me. Like, this is like, put, you know, it's like, it was, like it was the beginning medal. Of like where I started chasing these crazy stunts.
Really?
After, going through that and what that gave me, now it created this sort of desire to build a highlight reel, you know, that leads to flipping cars for Super Bowl commercials and jockeying horses and getting attacked by tigers and all the different things. It led to this
kissing insanity.
Bears. Yeah, kissing bears. Bear. Yeah, like all of like this really incredible life moments that, again, no one can ever take away from me. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's funny. I had Travis Pastrana in here a couple weeks ago, and he talked about you and talked about some of the adventures you guys had and how you were always like the cool young guy, you know, just always can make people laugh and all these things.
Yeah.
He's done some crazy stuff, right?
Yeah, he's there's three people like him, right? There's
Laird,
Danny Way, and him.
Yeah.
I believe they have a genetic malfunction. Like, I'm a real dude. I'm scared, and none of this makes sense. I'm only doing this for story and like part of a business hustle.
Yeah.
He literally just loves to do it. You know what I mean? And he doesn't have the fear gene. Like, all of us have, those three guys specifically, they have this thing that says first, oh, this is too dangerous. They only think about making it. They only think about making it. And when they get hurt doing it, it's like, ah, shit. Like, didn't expect that.
Oh,
like, they
now.
Literally are like, Travis specifically, like, he's like, what? Dang it. I don't want to get hurt. Darn it, I'm hurt again. Another surgery. Like, and, like, you know, and Laird, him, Danny Way is the same way where, and you can't trust them, you know? The same way when I told Laird, can I get, you know, I'd never surfed before. Can I get towed into a big wave? He's like, easy. And I'm like.
And you did it, actually.
Right. Yeah, right. But I didn't trust. I just know him and their type. The same. You just can't trust them because they think everybody is as gnarly as they are.
Yeah.
They think, you know, and all, I've been through it with all of them, from almost dying on the wave with Laird to trying to backflip a motorcycle with Travis and whiskey throttling into a crane and trying to jump the mega ramp with Danny Way and like could not get myself to break through, you know. But Danny Way, they all have that missing element. Of being fearful of something and literally only think about doing it. But Danny Way will have surgery on his knee and only get local anesthetic so he can watch it and talk through. I kind of see that. Yeah, let's kind of pull like – that's how like gnarly he is. You know what I mean? Like that's just like a – despite doing so many insane stunts, like I still look at myself – they were all done with sort of a reason of content or for a major – you know, flipping that car for Chevy was – they were the title of my league. They were – it was the season premiere. It was a Super Bowl commercial. It was just this multi-platform, mega multi-million dollar deal that boiled down to like, okay, you got to really go flip a car now.
But they'll do that like on a Tuesday afternoon.
Right. Like to them, they're like – but they respect that. You know what I mean? They're like, damn, that's a gnarly one. You know what I mean? Like they
props.
They give me respect like I'm in their zone.
You're in the club. Though,
like I know like that's just – I'm just trying to make TV or content. You know what I mean? Like I'm retiring. You guys will do this forever.
Right.
You know what I mean? Even like I'll go work out with Laird. Have you done a Laird pull workout?
I did a breathing workout with him and we did like a other type of exercises. But I want to do the pool workout with him. Oh, it's man. Insane, I hear.
It's just –
have you done a few or just one?
I've done a couple and
it's gnarly, right?
What I love about him is like, especially like getting in and out of the ice tubs in the middle of the workout, which is just the worst, right? But he's always like, he literally like has so much confidence in me. He's like, you know, hey, not a thing for you, not a thing for you. You know, you got the mind for this. And it's like, just so that Laird isn't like, that I live up to Laird's expectation, I am like dying inside that ice thing, but acting like I'm just like, yeah, so anyway, Laird, like, what
no big thing,
like,
no big thing.
Man, but when I got, he really thought I died. He was so shook.
In the ocean or what?
Yeah. When I got towed into the wave, I got held under by two waves, had two life jackets on. And I literally
still under with two life jackets.
Yeah, and I finally was fighting and fighting and fighting and fighting, and I finally had to give up, like just give up. Like I'm like, I'm gonna die. Like,
no way.
I was giving up, and the moment I gave up, like I popped out, and he just come flying in. And he's like, "We're done. We're done." Like he really thought I died. He was shook. He was like really, really shook. Like
you couldn't breathe or what?
No, not because I was like I was spun so crazy.
You didn't know which way it was
down.
Because
I got caught in two of them, right? And I could never get out. You know, and it's an interesting way to experience fear, right? Because you're floating on your back in the ocean, right? And I'm like, man, just get me the up because I don't want to get bit by a shark, right? All I can think of is like sharks coming underneath because I just wanted to get up. And then on most really dangerous shit, you face it. You go towards it versus like this one, you're just kind of cruising and it comes from behind.
Oh.
So now you're just like, you get towed in at an angle where you're not looking at it, right? So when you get towed in, the wave is completely, so you're like, oh, and then like a house falls on you. Right. And then you are now it's a fight for life, right? It's so nuts, you know. So still the only time I've ever surfed. The first and only time I've ever surfed.
I saw a clip of you, a highlight clip of you getting on it though.
Yeah.
Is that right? So you actually hit a wave?
Yeah, it was great.
Oh. Yeah. Is this after you almost died or before?
Before.
Okay.
Before. It was like, let's get one more, you know, it was like that type of
and one more was done. Yeah, okay.
That type of thing.
So if you were to describe yourself, or a bio that you would give yourself, who would you say that Rob Dyrdek is?
Well, I have it very refined, you know what I mean, in the sense that it's a core trait, you know what I mean, where I consider myself a do or dier, you know what I mean, like someone that has the fortitude, the work ethic, and the grit to turn all their passions into reality, you know, by seeing it, believing it, planning it, and doing it, you know, and to me, and a self-discovery of like really what makes you tick, you know, and then I look at it as an even deeper level of I'm passionately compelled, right? I don't have contrived ambition. Like I'm not being driven by trying to prove something wrong or trying to do anything. I genuinely am passionately compelled to do all the things that I do, right? Yeah. I am obsessively curious. Right.
Yeah,
that's why
too. I
relentlessly learn, you know what I mean? And completely evolve and continue to shift into different levels of reality based off of the knowledge that you have and the ability to set goals and build plans only based off of what you believe in. Your belief is only based off your knowledge, right? It's just an experience, right? Relentlessly consistent, You know what I mean? I you get me the same way. Parking attendant gets me the same way as Lorenzo Fertitta. You know what I mean? And billionaires and TV executives to skate kids. Like, and you know what I do. If you're around me, you know how hard I work. I've never not worked hard. I don't all of a sudden, I don't go high and low and disappear, you know, profoundly grounded. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's success or failure, there's a lesson and it's all humbling.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? At the end of the day, grateful, based off of God, what an amazing life that you've even been allowed to live. Right.
I love that.
And, honestly brilliant. You know what I mean? There's things that I really know that I'm great at and I'm honest with myself on the things that I'm not. Right.
Yeah.
And I think that someone like me who thinks they can do everything, you tend to you tend to think you can do everything and get caught out there when you're, you know, Mr. Know-it-all about everything that you don't fully understand because you decide what it is based off of your experience, right? And I think that's sort of a part of me that has evolved, you know, like energetically driven, you know what I mean? Like where you're inspired by energy. Like, you know, your energy is going to control all those around you and that ultimately we're all energy and how it all feels and feeds in and out is going to determine how everything around you ultimately works. You know what I mean? And,
you know, the source of all the outcomes around you.
100%, right?
100% and, responsible and source.
And even mastering how to master that energy is the fundamental core principle of happiness.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's like you literally either wake up and you see the world half full, and that means it doesn't matter what's going on, you're handling it, you're looking towards the future, you're progressing, all this stuff, you see it half empty, you could pick apart in every aspect of your life, right? So to me, in this evolution, it's becoming how do you get up every day and make sure you're looking at it half full and the simple fundamental controlling your energy, right? Because at the end of the day, that's all that you have. You can sleep for 2 hours and if you're living in that energy, you could go 100 miles an hour. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know? You could sleep for 7 hours and be healthier than because your diet's on point, every last aspect, and you could just feel dead to the weight of the world could be on you when you're half empty. You
know what I mean? A lot of that stems from gratitude, which you talked about, being grounded in gratitude, right?
Yeah. And to a degree, right? It's like every tool, even being gratitude does you no good when you're half empty. You can be like, oh, I feel like you could start picking everything apart and you can tell yourself, the same way that like you can put out a vision for whatever you want. But if you don't believe in the steps or understand what the steps are, you don't believe that vision. You know what I mean? It's like so many people, are over positive without having realistic positivity. Now, it doesn't mean you shouldn't dream big, but you better dream in sequence. To get to there, I'd have to go to here. And if I get to that, if you can't identify what levels you've got to reach to get to that, you're never going to truly believe it. And if your subconscious doesn't actually believe it, you're not going to manifest even what you even set out of your goal that's too big to even ultimately achieve.
So how do you manage your energy with all the different things that are going on, the relationships you have? You got a baby coming on the way, you know, businesses, TV shows, executives, brands, you know.
Yeah.
How do you manage your energy so that you're always half full?
I live a completely systematic life. You know, it's – I think you know it well. It's the habit side, right? And now imagine if your habit level goes even further, right? Where now you only pick projects and build projects where your part of it is only where you find energy. So now
it doesn't take your energy.
Right. And then now connect that to having a complete life plan and total purpose that's scalable.
Yeah.
Right. So now every aspect of your life has purpose and meaning. So your faith in your big ideas is always there because you believe in your plan. And you're not getting outside your comfort zone because you've built your entire system around making sure you stay there. It's almost impossible to drift out of it. Now, I have intangibles like incredible love. Right. I have the love of my life and the person that I was absolutely meant to live on this earth with forever, right? And create a family and build forever. And that's something that's we all hope and dream for, but actually achieving it is the greatest of great unknowns and actually getting. And when you are already built around creating a systematic life plan on top of optimizing that and building it to evolve as you grow. But now when you're building that forever plan with someone that you are fully aligned with in that purpose together, and now your entire universe is built around the both of you, it's something to be grateful for at an extremely fundamental level.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it's not many people I know could articulate it like that or actually live it and understand what it actually feels like. Because it's
what's
especially
it feel like?
Relationships. It's peace. Hmm. You know what I mean? And it's you get up each day. It don't matter how chaotic things are. You look at it half full. You just deal with it as it goes, and you've built your world in a way that nothing. There's the stakes aren't so high in anything that you're doing, and at the end of the day, your family and your core relationship that's at the center of it all is the most important, right? So your balance naturally occurs because you're not. A lot of really driven people have to fight to find balance. Right. Versus building an entire balanced system, so that you live in balance. You never have to search for it. You actually live in it. And part of living in that balance is making sure that you live in the energy of everything and get up every day and look at it half full. Right. Because you just look at, you're happy, you know, and that's, it's a difficult thing to achieve. It took me 3 years. I would say meeting Tony Robbins was a huge part of it.
When did you meet him?
2 years ago, right? I had basically 3 years ago, I had just finally had enough of what I was doing.
Which was?
Everything, right? And if you...
A little bit of everything.
If you choose... Because when you literally can do anything and you choose to do it all, you end up standing for nothing.
Yeah.
Right? And I was always doing all these things thinking one of them was going to be the answer. And I finally stopped and said, no, let's decide what it's all for and what you actually want to do forever and begin to build that and transition into the rest of your life in a plan that is scalable to who you are. So it's puts you in what you love to do the most.
Yeah.
And that gives you that same sort of creative freedom to have a ton of variety so you can still do a ton of different things but not be burdened by any of them, right, is sort of ultimately what it is. And then what can you master?
Yeah.
What do you want to be a master of, right? You have to decide what your mastery is so that you can spend the rest of your life getting better and better and better and better, right? And that was sort of my self-discovery along with the idea of what does money mean to you? And you do all these companies and do all this stuff and TV and all this stuff.
What is it all for?
What is it all for? Right. And
what is it all for now?
To me, I love to create, right? Now, I love the lifestyle, that money provides you, right? Because it gives you this immense amount of freedom and security, right? And, the problem is if you don't build it in a way that it's built to be secure, where you're risking all the time and doing all this stuff and you don't have a plan for all of it holistically, sometimes you swing into this very burdensome where you over leverage yourself or got too risky. You know, it creates like, but because you're chasing a bigger thing, well, what's the bigger thing? Like, and that's really what Money Master the Game did to me. It was like, just,
powerful book, man.
Just made me stop and build a plan for money for the rest of my life, right? And ultimately that is, to create a lifestyle that my money provides, right? And as that scales, my lifestyle scales, mm-hmm. right? As opposed to getting a place of thinking that I'm going to get rich and a system that I've created. It doesn't matter if I make 100 million or 500 million or 5 billion, the system will never change. It's scalable with where I go, right? And for me, it's why I built a systematic entire venture system, right, that I call the Deer Deck Machine, which is basically my philosophy on how I will build businesses. Mm-hmm. So that's my passion, right?
Like, building from scratch and investing in businesses?
Both.
Or,
yeah. Both. Yeah. Builds, invests. I invest to learn. I build because it's my passion, right? And I build with do-or-diers like me, right? And long-term, I want to master curating talent and ideas and do-or-diers, building their ideas, and then selling them, right? I don't like running companies, right? Yeah. I don't like operating businesses, right? Like, I love being in the creative side of it, and it's only fun when it's in that hyper growth, right? It's so exciting, and the ultimate payoff is that exit. Yeah. And I want to build it with people that want to take and run their ideas forever. We're going to build these businesses to last forever. But I only want to be there in a 3 to 5 run of helping you build, codify,
grow exponentially,
and
go. Yeah.
And just do that over and over for the rest of my life, right?
Sounds
and,
pretty fun.
And just get better and better at it, right? And so for me, it's, you know, right now I've been investing in a ton of alcohol brands, right? Because I created this sort of disruptive tactical revenue model that approaches disrupting alcohol distribution by building a distribution by neighborhood strategy connected to marketing and storytelling to owning on and off premise in neighborhoods instead of cities, right? And what it allows you to do is go underneath this sort of super strict distribution world and use your brand's identity and what it stands for in a community to scale revenue that ultimately, if you break through at any level in the alcohol space, they buy them at 10 times revenue.
Really?
So it's not about creating a profitable business. You literally get to 10 million, you sell for 100. It's that clean,
wow.
Right? So it's like, I invested in 3 to test 3 different tactical models, a college distribution one for a boxed wine, a white flavored whiskey with an elite team of guys that have built and sold businesses at a really premium valuation, early startup, 22 million posts, like, and then a more media based group that are creating a ton of content, but I've all shared them. This is a tactical model on how to disrupt alcohol distribution with this neighborhood revenue matrix, right? And let's see what happens, right? So now I get to test and learn. Once I refine and see that it works, I'm gonna start building, right? I'm gonna start building because that's what I actually love to do. Is like come up with the idea, come up with the name, the website's available. What? Like think about that, you know, like and add to it. Like that's my passion. So if I get to do that in my venture side, right? And that's what I love to do. I'm only going to get better and better at it forever, right? And then for me, I put all my money in private placement real estate, multifamily homes, right? Where it's
here or in Ohio or all over the place.
All over, but only with high level expert operators.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you get a tax free dividend, right? And then they roll them. They sell the units every 5 to 10 years, and you roll that into another one, 1031 exchange it, so you never pay taxes on that either, right?
Wow.
So now that creates sort of your sort of like what I call the financial freedom fund, where that dividend, if you keep your expenses inside that dividend, your lifestyle is never at risk, right? So as you continue to play in your venture
and other things,
you have like live in your venture world. Every time one pops, then you load it back into your freedom fund. And the beauty of that system is it snowballs over time, and that's the cleanliness of how I look at it. You want to live within the means of your freedom fund. Have fun and your passion and your mastery inside your business. And then my personal home, you know what I mean? Real extra big on like the personal home because, you know, conceptually, I want to have the center of gravity for my family. I want to have 5 kids, you know, and I want the home that they grow up in to be where they come back to for the rest of their lives. Like I want to tether them.
It's that Ohio feeling, man. You go back home.
And I just want that as part of the great stability of just knowing like this is where you truly come from, you know, and that's never going to change. You know what I mean? And that holistically now is connected. Everything, the entire plan of every decision I make connects back to that entire system. You know what I mean? And even doing a, you know, I wrote and I'm doing a business show for NBC, right? Mm-hmm. And it's, everybody's like, what's your next TV? All the networks, everybody's all on me, like, you know, and I did not want to do anything until I figured out my entire system.
So it makes sense.
Right. Yeah. And it adds to my mastery, yes. Right? So the show is about built around a fund that is curating ideas and investing in one and having a competition for three like businesses where one wins the capital, right?
So it helps your business, your system, it all feeds into it.
And, yeah, and the beauty of it is I can look at so much deal flow as sort of my own venture business, but I've been open to this entirely new world because I'm looking at so much business now because I'm casting for a television show, right? So it all again ties back to this entire holistic picture that at the center is just being happy. You know what I'm saying? That's it. You know what I mean? That's it.
Be happy.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
Just being happy. And then how do you be happy? Just living the energy. What do you get energy from? I actually get energy from all that shit. I get energy from the stable side of it. I get energy from building this amazing house and having this amazing family. I get energy from the entrepreneurs I work with and my venture business, right? It's like.
It's all of it.
It literally now is where this entire swelling universe of at the center is just literally just a happy dude. You know what I mean? And that's very difficult to discover within yourself, especially when the train's going 1,000 miles an hour and you're doing a million things. I just was like, no, you have to. You got to do it now. You know what I mean? Like, you got to do it now. And you've ran 40 years of just all over the place. You know, it doesn't work. It's like, stop and think about it all. And then what does it all look like? And I would argue that even when that self-discovery is right around the time I met my wife,
really,
this is meeting T-Rob. This is like, you know, all sort of the aspects. I hired this really brilliant strategist, came from the agency world that helped me bring all this out of my mind and codify it, from a business side as I was doing all the self-discovery of trying to see how it all adds up, you know, and, you know, cause even, you know, I try to explain to Tony, like, you know, you have no idea how much meeting you changed, like, my life, but I've never gone to any of the big stuff. I've never, like, you know, it's just me and him, you know, and like, he just doesn't, like, I just feel like he doesn't understand the actual impact and what I actually did with how much it shifted me into this mentality. Cause even the guy who led me to the private placement strategy, is AJ Gupta, who wrote the book with him, right? And he was like, right as I was prepared to start like doing, meeting financial advisors, he had emailed me and I was like, oh man, I was actually going. He just immediately put me on with AJ and then AJ comes to my office like the next day. And then I'm like, I'm literally laying out this whole plan. I'm missing this element. And you know, cause there's a lot of different theories and what it is. And then he's like, well, if that's your true theory, then. And that this is the balance of your portfolio of this is your risk and venture, then that needs to be real estate. And this is how it needs to look. Like he really like put all that. He was the final piece to put in. Even when I try to explain that to Tony too, he's still like, you know, cause he's like serve over everything. You know what I mean? Like it's hard to like, you know, even he sent me an early copy of I Am Your Guru. And I'm like, man, I'm like, I just wish there was so much more, like who you really are and the behind the scenes of you is so interesting. It's like, but I wish there was more of you, but he doesn't want to make it about him.
It's about the students. Yeah. You know I watched it with him the day before it released and it was amazing.
Yeah.
A little, at CAA, actually, there was a small screen.
Oh, you did? Okay. I went to, there was two here, right? There was the CAA one and then the one down on Wilshire, right?
Uh-huh. You went to that one?
Yeah. Look, this is what happened to that one.
He was sitting right behind me. It was so funny to watch him, like, watch himself.
Look, After that one, there was a Q&A with the
director. An hour and a half
did he give
workshop,
you a,
dude.
Did he give you
with
the workshop?
Music
the
and the visualization.
Oh,
and the,
so great.
It was amazing, man.
Man, and
no, he's amazing.
Look.
So much value.
Look, this is what you need to learn from him, right? I'm not trying to mentor you here.
I'll take it. Hey.
Think of his mastery. Think of how tight his message is.
So tight.
Right? It is like, and it's like to me, his principles should be taught in elementary school because it would help you begin to build a foundation of who you are as an individual as you decide to journey into your life, you know? And that is from doing it for so long and so many and so much that it is, you know, obviously he continues to optimize it, but damn it, that shit is like, it is a philosophy that is so tight and it's deeper than people even realize.
Yeah.
Because you might drift off and add some things to it and realize, it's actually like, it is like the core epicenter for evolving yourself continually and making the best version of yourself. You know what I mean? And like, even I was on him tough, like, you need to, this needs to be curriculum, man. You need to, like, you want to influence, like, really influence, like,
starts
the
with kids.
World.
Yeah.
Like, make a movement to add this as part of being taught in schools on how to, like, empower yourself.
Yeah.
And build your own self-confidence and find your mastery and purpose, like, and understand who you are. Like, this should start in school. This shouldn't be for the few that are driven enough to figure it out.
I hear you, man. You're preaching the choir to
me. Yeah, maybe you should start a school curriculum.
Yeah, school of greatness. That's what it is.
Shit, what am I saying?
I'm curious. First off, I want to respect your time because I feel like we're a little over. Can I ask a few more questions?
Really? What was that?
I feel like it was 10 minutes.
Look, man, I just get to talking, man.
I just want to make sure I respect your time because I have a few more
questions. Damn, it's 108.
I have like 20 more questions, but I wonder if I could ask a few more.
Yeah.
If you got a bounce, we can.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. What are the non-negotiable habits every single day that you must do in order to have an optimal life that day?
It's very, because I think you know, athletes know it more than anybody, right?
Yes.
Because you understand.
You have the unfair advantage, I think.
Yeah, and when you get in, you understand, people that have never been an athlete will be like, I've been eating well and I don't feel any different, right? It's like, turning things to habit matters, right? So this is just what I do. I look at life in three levels, right? I look at health, life, and work, right? So every morning I get up, I weigh myself, full body composition. You know what I mean? I brush my teeth. I immediately have an oatmeal and a water, and then have a coffee. I track how many hours I slept. I rate at the beginning of the morning, how motivated I am between 1 and 10, right? And if I'm below 5, it's half full. If I'm above 5, it's half empty. If I'm above 5, it's half full. Then I track everything I eat and
all day.
Yeah. And when I eat, but I have, a food system, so I don't have to think about it like during the week. So the meals just show up at the time. So I don't have to think about it. Cause again, you take your
too much energy to be creative with the food.
Right? Don't,
you gotta do
don't want
stuff.
To it. Like, you know, either, yeah. And, you know, and then you have the freedom to trail off, you know, the discipline is tracking it. So you understand where you're at. And then I track how, much I worked that day and how much I spent on health. Right. So, trainer comes to my house every day at 8, and I either do body work or mobility or whatever it may be, since I've been re-engineering my total structure, and then I try to do a stretch and elliptical at some point during the day and some form. And now in my new office there's like a holistic center in there, so I've been going down there and doing different things, so I'm murdering it when I put in 2 hours a day on the body, right? So I track how much I work, how much I'm just living life, how much I slept, and how much time I spent on my health, right? And then at the end of every day, I'd give it a life, a 0 to 10, health, a 0 to 10, and work, a 0 to 10, right? And
that's cool.
So I have this incredible data. You know what I mean? Of like looking at like, and it's
where
just
do you
so
track
interesting.
It? Is it on like a software?
Yeah, it's so sick.
You write
I have it all
down,
on Google Docs. No, so I put it all on the Google Dude, calendar.
I gotta right? get this system, man.
Put it all on Google Calendar, and then my assistant then pumps me out like in Google Docs, like my monthly numbers, right? So you see, cause you, wow. look, as an athlete,
yeah.
you'll appreciate like understanding every aspect of your body composition. But as an athlete, like, you know, when you're losing it, right? And you're fading and like you stop tracking for a couple days and now you watch, you know, it's that you might stop weighing yourself for a little bit and you're afraid to get on it. Now it's like 2 weeks yes. goes by and you get on and bam, there's like 7 extra. You know what I mean? It's like, it's that.
Yeah.
The purpose of the system. Now it's not foolproof. Like life still hits you. You know what I mean? I'm over here preaching.
Traveling your this, your
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you know it because you understand it, right?
Yeah.
You know what is absolutely perfect for you. It's so hard to maintain it.
Very hard.
Right? So it's the system for me is just what, like, by gamifying it.
Yes.
I get excited about the numbers and like, oh, I'm, you know, I kept it at 1500 calories and yeah. I was at like 26 and like I get into the gamification of it.
That's
I
cool.
love looking at the data.
Yeah.
That's what motivates me to stay inside the structure because yes. I ultimately know it's the best version of what I'm going to do. And I believe even when you're that healthy, there's about 3 layers deeper that you're able to accomplish because
yeah.
your mind is thinking about everything all the time. And then you're solving problems in between other tasks because you're so much more clear. Right. And I think that that's especially really being super healthy and clean diet and whatever that is for you. It's just not filling yourself with a ton of garbage.
Sugar,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's layers that you begin to unlock that you don't realize because you might just equate it to like, oh, I feel great, you know, or yeah. And then you could get hit by something in life and all that healthy diet and everything could literally crush you because like what just happened in life, was such a burden that doesn't matter how healthy you are, you're not going to live through that. You know what I mean? You're not going to find energy through that sort of burden. But being an athlete and understanding your body at its good, bad and really bad, right?
Yeah.
And really great. Like you know how hard really great is to sustain.
So hard.
It's the, how do you just be good? You know, I'm not trying to be really great because it's just unsustainable. You know what I mean? It's good is just part of
consistently.
Again, yeah. It's just part of living in that. And that's sort of like the structure to how I have it. And then I just, you know, there's a company out here called MyFitFoods. I don't know if
I love MyFitFoods. Right, so, down on the street for me.
Right. So I have, you know,
so
my
good,
team
man.
Just manage MyFitFoods.
Cauliflower
so,
mash they have.
Yeah.
Oh.
And it's just, you know, you get to manage your calories clean and like
so
you're, it's fulfilling. And I, you know, even recently shifted from the every 2 hours to the Tim Ferriss every 4 hours.
Yeah.
Right. And
yeah.
Especially if you're not doing a ton of physical activity because I'm only doing rehab and trying to like re-engineer my structure that, you know, you can stay lean that way and still have the energy without, overdoing it. And of course I did all the blood tests and like, you know, and what I found, you might find this interesting. You ever do blood tests to kind of see what you're looking
yes.
to or any of that?
Yes.
What I found really interesting is all these allergies and all these different things. When I just went to this clean diet and sustained it for a year, I went and got all my tests back. Like, I didn't do anything specifically, like all where they'll be like, you know, take this vitamin for 16 hours. All I did was just eat clean and then retest. And my gluten tolerance was like almost nothing. Like before it was like, he's so allergic to gluten. It's like all these different things. And it really leveled everything out by just
eating what
like,
we're supposed to eat.
Yeah, and trying to be on like 80-20 where you just, you know, when you lose it a little bit. But look, life gets you. You know what I mean? No matter – even with this great purpose and bragging about how this little guy in the center all happy, you still get – I still get drilled.
Of course.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A hand – there's – you know, it's – in it, when you live in the excitement, it's still hard to – manage expectations.
It is,
right? Expectations is that great burden of our life, because it's this hopefulness, like a new opportunity, big thing, like, you know, whatever it may be. It's always, there's so much energy associated with expectation and the hope behind whatever that may be. And getting a couple of those in a row, getting slapped back at you, can drain the strongest, most driven, purposeful person. You know what I mean? It's just a part of life, no matter how much you've calibrated who you are as a person and built your life, you're still going to get like punched in the gut, you know, every couple months.
Of course. What's missing in your life right now?
Man, I don't look, it's not very interesting. But to me, it's the family and home growing. You know what I mean? Like, sons do here any day.
It's crazy, man.
Really excited about it. But, you know, I want to build the house. You know what I mean? I've just been going through the process. It's going to take so many years to do it. And I want to build just this, you know, place that I love and live forever. So it's like, by the time that's done and I've sort of transitioned out of dancing on a laptop and being the skate guy and sort of evolved into like, this sort of, doer, dyer, entrepreneur, retired adventurer and athlete, like, and when I can evolve into that space fully and have built the home that I'm going to live in forever and now had the become a dad for a couple of years, like, I'm still like, I still long for, beginning to get into that forever of my life, because I just am at the beginning of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay. Final couple questions, I promise. This is called the three truths. Three truths. So you've lived in your home forever. You've been there for a long time.
Yeah.
And it's the last day for you.
Yeah.
And everything you've ever created, the videos, the books, the products, it's all been erased.
Yeah.
And everyone's there. You're happy. You've done everything you want to do. And they say, we don't have anything to remember you by, except for memories. But here's a piece of paper and a pen, and we want you to write down your three truths.
Yeah.
Three things that you know to be true about everything you've experienced in your incredible life, like bit by sharks, bears, all the stuff you do.
Yeah.
What are the three things you know to be true about life that you'd pass on to us?
Yeah.
What would that be?
I think number one is that everything you seek to achieve, build a believable plan. You know what I mean? It is, whether you literally just want to like become a paper person, build a plan on how it is and what it's going to be, like whatever you want to do, like build a plan you believe in, because you'll have the faith through the tough times to actually do it, because you actually know you can do it, you know. Number two, I think it would ultimately be to learn to be passionately compelled, you know, in the sense of, learn to find what drives you, based off of, you wouldn't have it any other way. Because ultimately, if you're using something for fuel, it's inevitably going to run out. But if it's an internal engine that is literally, you don't know any other way to do it, because this is why you do what you do, is because you're compelled by your passion, that will fuel you forever.
Yeah. Number three.
Number three is simple. Love people and have fun. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, you still get up every day and interact with people and their energies. And if you don't really learn how to find beauty in every single person and calibrate to an exchange of what you're about, you're just not going to be a happy person. Mm-hmm. If you can't find joy and fun and literally any, like pretty much anything that you do, especially when it comes to interacting with people, you will never be happy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Those are great truths, man. Those are great truths.
I don't know if those are exact truths. They were pretty long.
They're good. I like them. I like them. Before I ask the final question, how can we as a community, in School of Greatness community, support you? What can we do? Yeah. What can we promote? Make sure everyone watch Ridiculousness, but what can we really do to serve you? What means the most to you right now?
Oh, no, I don't, I mean, I'm just, you know, look, I would just hope that, I think people that find you are, just seeking knowledge and looking to elevate themselves. You know, I don't do too many things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I appreciate you coming on.
And I just knew philosophically you would enjoy.
Well, I love this. I want to go for 5 more hours, man. I'm like, I can't get enough of this stuff, you know?
I knew that you would philosophically enjoy the evolution of who I am and my way of thinking.
Yeah, you
know,
of course.
And to me, I would just hope that long term, I'm not a teacher. You know what I mean? I love having conversations and talking about why I do what I do. One day, I will say this is how I lived my life and why, you know, as just not for everyone, but this is why I did it. But I'll never be, someone that will be speaking and writing books and doing all this type of stuff. You know what I mean? But it's ultimately, I'm not a teacher. That's along the self-discovery. Cause you would think someone that thinks like this would be like, damn, this is a teacher.
I don't look at myself as a teacher either. I look at myself as a student that shares what I'm learning.
Yeah. But your passion is sharing, and inspiring and teaching others.
Yes.
You're taking this knowledge,
repackaging it
and giving it to them to help them, you know, and I just think that ultimately it's in that self-discovery. I just knew it was never, you know, something that I,
you're doing in your own way. You're entertaining, teaching through entertaining.
Right. And I would rather like doing this, I don't mind because it's a conversation, you know, and I think it's the reality of, when someone like you has a conversation with me, it's just another, hopefully to the listeners that are on your podcast to be inspired that there's just some truths in there that they can just apply, you know, cause it's the same way that, you know, you read Think and Grow Rich when you're 20, you barely understand it. You read it at 25, you get a little bit more out of it. You read it at 30, it's like, oh wow. You read that shit at 40. And you're like, God damn it. Like, this is the most powerful lessons ever. Like, you can literally control reality if you master this book, right? Yeah. And
we're both in the documentary, by the way. The documentary.
Oh, you are?
I'm in it as well. Okay. Yeah, I saw that you're in it also. Yeah. I'm excited about that.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, because it's truth, man.
It is.
And it's the sketchy ones of the sexual mutation and sort of what happens when you can control like reality. Like it's the stuff that's hard for a young man to fully understand. You really get it at 40. You know what I mean? And it's just the idea of every single thing, you know, to this day, you know, what I listen to today working out is, The Richest Man in Babylon. You know what
Great
I mean?
Book.
It's like,
Great
it's,
book.
I, you know, listen to your, audio book, and watched a bunch of your stuff. Just getting an understanding of, and wanting to ultimately hear your philosophy, which has a ton of Think and Grow Rich and a ton of that sort of, to me, it's the athletic mind, like applying that sort of the same thing from the athlete's mind, you know what I mean? Which is I can relate to because I know what the effects are, you know, not unless you're really in it. It's hard to understand what discipline can do to you physically and how you can grow, you know?
Yeah.
That was a really long way of saying I don't have anything to promote.
Okay. Well, robdeerdeck.com is your site. It's a beautiful site. And you were sharing your 10 principles, but you got to like 5 or 6.
Yeah.
So I want to make sure everyone goes and reads your 10 principles because when I read them, I was like, this is really profound to have your own kind of mission statement, you know, declaration of what you stand for. Yeah. And I think everyone should follow that process for themselves. So go check out robdeerdeck.com and see those principles. It's at the bottom.
That's it.
Also, you have a foundation, right?
Yeah, haven't launched it yet.
You haven't launched it yet.
We never even got into that.
I saw the video trailer for it. It was like, you know.
To give you the concept is I'm a do or dyer. I want to build companies with do or dyer entrepreneurs, right? And I want to build 50 to 100 businesses that I sell over the rest of my life. And from a philanthropy side, I don't want to help entrepreneurs. I want to help people live these insane moments like I got to live, you know, and rather than build a foundation around any like entrepreneurialism or a cause or something, I want to build it around achieving life moments. So if you can prove to me you've planned out every single aspect, you know, you figured out a way to put a rocket on a motorcycle, and you've got an idea to jump it, you know, 500 feet and parachute out, and it's going to cost you $2,000 for the bike and $6,000 for the ramp, and you need this much space, it's going to cost you $75,000. Be like, you laid it all, you planned it beginning to end to your achievement. I'm going to give you the money, right? Because I want to live vicariously through the do or dieer like me, who's got a crazy thing that they want to do, but no one would ever provide a resource for that.
Sure.
And if I look back on my life, when everything's been erased and all I've got to do is tell stories, it's going to be about those 100 individuals that I built and sold businesses with, and how excited I was about their ideas, and the 1,000 or so dreams that I made come true for those people who are just like me, that cut from that spirit, that created some amazing idea that I helped bring alive, right?
That's cool,
and
man.
You have these two things, and what do they all connect back to? They're all just like me, just do or die, same mentality in that sort of realm.
That's
right?
Cool.
And that's, I can do that forever.
Yeah. When are you going to launch that?
Probably in like a year or so.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Well, I'm gonna write a check for $1,000 for one of the first people that you wanna support. So
look, I appreciate that.
Of course, man, because I believe in everything that you've done, and I appreciate your energy and your impact you're making in the world. So I'll get you to check today.
Yeah, well, we'll wait on that.
I'll get it to you right now. Okay. Final question. Before I ask the final question, I want to acknowledge you for a moment, Rob, for your incredible spirit, your incredible heart, and your passion, man. You've got such a will to live a happy, joyful life. And you're like a symbol to me. You're like a symbol of someone who can come up with any idea and make it happen. Yeah. And that symbol for me is such an inspiration, because so many people look up to you and say, hey, if this guy, the small kid from Ohio who's a skateboarder, can create anything he wants and have fun doing it, and it doesn't look stressful, like, you're exactly the way you are on TV. Yeah. You're like just good old happy dude, you know? Good old happy dude.
Happy dude trying to be a dad.
That's it, man. But you're like a symbol of a lot of inspiration for people because of the way you're being every single day and how you show up in the world. So I want to acknowledge you for your gifts, for your ability to be creative and also have systems for yourself, because a lot of creative people don't have that.
Yep.
They're all over the map. And acknowledge you for taking your life and your relationship to the next level and becoming a dad and having this vision. That's a beautiful, incredible thing, man. So I acknowledge you for all the gifts in the world that you bring. And my final question is, what's your definition of greatness?
You know, to me, because I think, you know, we tend to look at greatness from a performance perspective. You know what I mean? And I think that's fair. Right. And I think it's owed to Tony Robbins to be that. Greatness is when, like, someone's true personal mastery inspires the masses. You know what I mean? Like, when whatever it is, when your personal mastery is at such a level that it inspires a mass amount of people, you know, and when you tie that to the Jordans and different athletes, when the Tiger Woods and in great thinkers and different things, when you're what you became so masterful at personally became this great source of inspiration, you know what I mean? And that's what leads to greatness. Super difficult, man. Super difficult.
Rob Dyrdek, thanks so much for coming on, man. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, man. Love the apartment.
Thanks,
man.
There you have it, my friend. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I love connecting with Rob. Every time I sit down with him, I learn something new from him. And his example of constantly pushing the boundaries, constantly taking risks, putting himself out there and doing what he does best. He's really learned about what his unique superpower is, and he goes all in on that thing. It's what I love about him. He also brings this positive attitude and this positive energy to every situation in his life. And he's such a great example of a role model that anyone could be following and learning from on a daily basis. So make sure to check him out, follow him on social media, watch his show Ridiculousness, and everything else that he has available on his site. Again, make sure to share this with a friend. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it. LewisHouse.com/901. If this is your first time here, then let me know by subscribing over on Apple Podcasts. Just click the subscription button on your Apple Podcast player. Subscribe over on Spotify or anywhere you like to listen to podcasts and leave us a review. We'd love to hear from you. We've got over 6,000 five-star reviews over on Apple Podcasts. So go leave us a review. Let us know what you enjoyed about this, how we can improve it, and any suggestions you have for the future. Also, a big thank you to our sponsors today, Hemp Fusion. And you can go to hempfusion.com right now and use the promo code GREATNESS for 20% off your first order and free shipping at hempfusion.com. Again, that's promo code GREATNESS over at hempfusion.com for 20% off your first order plus free shipping. And also, thanks to our sponsor, Zoom. Now, Zoom didn't invent video conferencing. They just made it a whole lot better. We use it for pretty much everything all day. So check it out right now. Go to Zoom. It's used by millions to connect around the world. So why wait any longer? Visit Zoom online and set up your free account today. And meet happy with Zoom. Again, I love this quote by Michael Jordan. Some people want it to happen. Some people wish it would happen. Others make it happen. Whatever your dream is, I want you to go out there and make it happen today. Just take one small action today that's going to move you closer to your dream. Obviously, the bigger steps you take and the more consistent you action you make, it's going to get you even closer faster. That's up to you. But I'm asking you to take one step today. Whatever that fear is you have, that uncertainty you have, that discomfort you have, lean into it and move you closer toward your dreams. You deserve it and you are worth it. I hope you know that. I love you very much. And you know what time it is. It's time to go out there and do something great.